Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay, do it. Let's do it.
Virginia's had a long love affair with oysters. Oyster beds were once so large and so abundant in the Chesapeake Bay, they protruded above the waterline and even blocked ship channels. But by the 1980s, over-harvesting disease and pollution had decimated them. Now, much to our economic and dining pleasure, some determined oyster lovers are working hard to bring them back. I'm Sarah McConnell, and this is With Good Reason.
Cold cake cod clams, against their wish, do it. Even lazy jellyfish, do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Wow. It's kind of funny, but almost every time I eat a good oyster, I think, gosh, that's better than I've ever had.
It's Jonathan Swift who gets credit for the line, "'Twas a brave man indeed who ate the first oyster." And for most of us, you either love them or hate them. Poet Nikki Giovanni of Virginia Tech, on the other hand, ate her first oyster as a child, and she still indulges.
Oh, my. I love oysters. They have not made the oyster that I don't love. I really like them raw, and I really like them with just a little bit of pepper, and I like a little lime on mine.
You're not the only oyster in the stew.
The Dean of Southern Cookery, Edna Lewis, penned an essay describing how food is intertwined with the seasons and cultures of the South. Here's Nikki Giovanni reading a portion of that essay.
Southern is a delicious oyster stew of sautéed oysters, cream, sherry, salt, cayenne, fresh ground pepper, sassafras, a spoon of butter in the bottom of the bowl, and a garnish of chervil.
Look here, babe. You're not the only oyster in the stew. Look out now.
Americans consume 100 million pounds of oysters each year, which we eat raw, smoked, baked, fried, roasted, steamed, canned, and even pickled and stewed. Reporter Nancy King is with me now. Nancy, you've recently visited the chef at Keswick Hall in Albemarle County to check out his favorite preparations for oysters.
Sarah, it was the dream assignment. I met Craig Hartman at the posh Keswick Hall, and we walked down to his big commercial kitchen, which is located in the basement of the building. And it turns out that Craig Hartman and oysters go back a long way.
You know, my first book that I read about food as a child that my mother gave me was called Consider the Oyster by M.F.K. Fisher. And it was actually a book that her mother had given her. Her grandfather, my great-grandfather, was an oysterman on the Wicomico River out of Salisbury, Maryland. And this book called Consider the Oyster is a fabulous book and so beautifully written. But I remember she says there were three kinds of oyster eaters. There's the person who likes them anyway, cooked, raw, steamed, baked. Then there's the purist who eats them only raw. And then there's the person who eats them only cooked. So I think I'm the first. I like them anyway. They're so versatile, but why don't we cook some of these up? These are actually Chincoteague oysters. This oyster is probably a good 3 inches by 2 inches. They're almost the same size as their shell. I mean, that's when you know you're in a good month. You know, you have an oyster that's nice and big and plump. And all I did was I laid them in these breadcrumbs that have a little, of course, the world-famous Old Bay seasoning. And you have to have a good breadcrumb. Don't buy the ones in the store. Make some breadcrumbs out of some type of white bread. Toast them just a little to dry them, just so, and then add a little Old Bay seasoning, just enough to have flavor. And that's all. That's all it takes. And now I have just a little bit of oil in a cast iron skillet, and we're going to lay them in there, and we're going to fry them. Here, let's bring them on over.
So how big's the skillet and how hot?
This is a 12-inch iron skillet, and I put 8 oysters in here. The amount of fat that I put in here is about a quarter of an inch. So basically, I like to put this kind of on medium-low.
So it's barely golden brown.
You know, when you cook them on low, you want them nice and golden, because the last thing you want to do with a fried oyster is to overcook it. You know, oysters are meant to be still juicy and succulent even when they're cooked. Anyway, these are almost done right here. I'm moving these to the back, and we're going to try them here in a second. I'm going to put these on the plate. I love the smell of oysters when they're cooking. Well, let's try. I have a fork here.
Okay.
This is a remoulade. Something here at Keswick Hall we call Lorenzo sauce. You just take a little bit of the Lorenzo and put it on top of one of the oysters. I'll try first.
Okay.
See what we think here. Wow. That's better than I remembered, actually. It's kind of funny, but almost every time I eat a good oyster, I think, gosh, that's better than I've ever had.
Do you remember your first oyster?
You know what? I wish I could say I remember. At my grandmother's house and my great-aunt's house and our place in Ocean City, Maryland, you know, they were just kind of part of my life. And we used to have oysters for dinner and oysters for breakfast. And
So is there a proper way to eat an oyster?
I don't think so. I still think probably the best way is eating them raw. Here, let's see if we can pop this oyster. There we go. See how that popped right open there? See, and then there's the oyster. I love those shells. I'm going to go ahead and eat this one. Are you ready? My God, that is good. These oysters, now, I have never eaten a pearl, and I've never found a pearl in an oyster. And I'll bet you I've opened 20,000 oysters in my day. And I've always hoped that one day I would find, like, the most beautiful pearl and be able to retire and only eat oysters. But I've never found it, so one of these days.
Down by the sea lived a lonesome oyster, every day getting sadder and moister. He found his home life awfully wet and longed to travel with the upper set. Poor little oyster. Fate was kind to that oyster, we know, when one day the chef from the Park Casino saw that oyster lying there and said, I'll put you on my bill of fare. Lucky little oyster.
Craig Hartman is proudly serving up Chincoteague oysters from Virginia's Eastern Shore. They're known for their brininess and plump size. Another Virginia oyster relished by connoisseurs comes from the Lynnhaven River in Virginia Beach. Jesse Dukes reports restoration efforts are underway to bring back the legendary Lynnhaven oyster. So, Jesse, why do people think the Lynnhaven oyster is tastier than oysters from somewhere else?
Well, I'm not an oyster expert, but I got to eat a Lynnhaven oyster, and it was really good. It was big, it was fat, it was salty, but it also had a lot of, I don't know, just oysterness to it, a lot of oyster flesh. And they all the people in Virginia Beach, people who work in restaurants, oystermen, they all know the Lynnhaven oyster. They know the Lynnhaven River because they see it. You know, it's right in the middle of their city. They grew up duck hunting there, or they used to pick up oysters. If they're old enough, they can remember going there and picking up a bushel of oysters just to eat. They know it. They're proud of it. They say it's the best oyster in the world.
And right now, the Lynnhaven Fish House Restaurant is serving Lynnhaven oysters. The Lynnhaven River has opened for a limited oyster harvest, and when available, you may experience the delicacy presidents and British royalty once enjoyed.
At the Lynnhaven Fish House, cooks are busy scrubbing algae off Lynnhaven oysters that just came out of the water. The chef, John Chapman, is a Virginia Beach native who takes a lot of pride in these oysters.
They're a delicacy. As a chef, for me to have to truck in oysters from Louisiana to my restaurant right here on the Chesapeake Bay, this kind of takes away something. And, you know, not to knock Louisiana, but we've got a better oyster here. And I ought to be able to serve oysters from my waters sitting right here on the water.
Fresh seafood right out of the water was the standard in Virginia Beach as recently as 30 years ago. But the place has changed. There used to be just a few cottages here, and now it's all condos, hotels, and new housing developments. In fact, the Lynn Haven River is right in the middle of a city that's tripled in population in 40 years, and that means pollution. I catch up with Lori Sorabella, who's with Lynn Haven River Now, which has been working hard to clean up the river. She's on a boat in Lynn Haven building an artificial oyster reef.
We know that oysters are a keystone species. We know that they create habitat for other animals. We know that they do so many really good things for the river. And so to start building oyster reefs all throughout an entire river and start to really see that they're making a difference, it's really exciting.
Captain Mike Steelman maneuvers the barge into position. Then deckhand R.L. Carpenter uses a fire hose to blast a huge pile of oyster shells off the boat and onto the reef.
Right there, good.
Lori Sorabella says that the floor of the Chesapeake Bay and its estuaries, like Lynn Haven, used to be covered with oyster reefs, somewhere as tall as 30 feet. They were made from generations of oysters growing on top of each other, kind of like coral reefs in tropical waters. And the ones in the bay took 20,000 years to grow. It only took 200 years of oyster dredging to flatten most of them out. Sorabella hopes to recreate healthy reefs that would be sanctuaries, off-limits to harvest from watermen.
Oysters can grow to be 30 years old, and the bigger the oysters are, the more they produce. I mean, those dinner plate-sized oysters, a 30-year-old oyster that could be the size of a dinner plate would be a tremendous reproducer for the system.
Okay, wait, did you catch that? Oysters the size of a dinner plate. Now, has she actually seen them that big?
I've seen shells that are, I would say, the size of a man's boot.
As it turns out, Captain John Smith did write about oysters the size of dinner plates that could feed a family of four. Now, it's been a long time since anybody's seen that kind of oyster, but lots of people remember when the oyster reefs were healthier. 30 years ago, the Lynn Haven River had oyster reefs that would grow more than 1,000 oysters per square meter. Now the watermen are finding one or maybe two oysters on that same square meter.
We just want to see this get going again, and so there'll be Lynn Haven oysters, and we can market them as Lynn Haven oysters.
I find waterman Pete Nixon in his Norfolk shop, where this time of year he builds boats for other fishermen. He and his business partner John Meekins are hoping to start growing oysters in Lynn Haven using a new technique called spat-on-shell, which might protect the oysters from disease and predators. There's a lot that could go wrong, but if Nixon and Meekins' plans play out, they could harvest 500,000 oysters or more at a market price of 50 cents each.
So you probably are pretty optimistic at this point.
My banker's optimistic that I'm going to be paying him a lot of interest. The interest right now is costing me $300 a month on what I've, you know,
borrowed for the equipment.
Well, wasted so far, you know.
So why is Nixon borrowing money to take this risk? Well, he's betting on clearing a decent profit, but he also really likes the Lynn Haven oyster.
Their flavor's unique. An oyster takes on the flavor of where it grows. Lynn Haven has the high salinity, but it also has that little bit of mud in there that just gives them their own unique flavor, where they're just a little bit better than seaside oysters, and they grow a little fatter.
He also grew up hearing stories about locally famous oyster growers in Lynn Haven, and some of the money he's spending will go to lease oyster bottom from the state, bottom he knows produced lots of good oysters decades ago.
I brought some oysters over to my dad at Christmas time, and he's 83. He said, oh yeah, he said, I used to buy them from Mr. Keeling all the time. I said, well, that's where they came from, Keeling's Marsh, you know, right on the edge of it. And he thought he had died and gone to heaven. He hadn't had them in so long.
So is the Lynn Haven oyster making a real comeback? Maybe. It's really too early to tell. But if Pete Nixon has his way, you may soon be able to finally eat a Lynn Haven oyster. At a fair price, of course. For With Good Reason, I'm Jesse Dukes.
Hundred modern-day oyster farmers are doing their part to replenish the Virginia oyster population through aquaculture. Dick Wilson is one of them. He retired from a career in finance 5 years ago and moved to the banks of the Rappahannock River, where it joins the Chesapeake Bay. He's now passionate about raising oysters.
Every August, I purchase 1,000 baby oysters, or spat, in a mesh bag about the size of a volleyball, and I bring them back to Fox Wells, which is the little town right there at the mouth of the river, and have floats that are 4 by 6 feet made out of PVC pipe, and spread them in a fine mesh bag, and about 3 months later, you go to an intermediate bag, and then from there, just into the wire cages. And it's been a wonderful thing for the health of the bay, because there are now 3,800 oyster farmers just like me who are raising oysters that naturally take plankton and other things out of the water that are causing the water to be cloudy, and that's what the baby oyster eats.
Do you really think you and these other gentlemen aqua farmers are changing the health of the bay?
Oh, absolutely, and it's not the men. This is a very unitary process. We have lady oyster farmers as well as men, and it makes a huge difference, because if you've lost 85% of the native oysters by reintroducing, I mean, if everybody just, you know, puts 1,000 in a year, and I'm probably at the low side, I mean, there's some that are putting 1 million oysters into floats every year, the health of the bay will be substantially better, because there's nothing else filtering out. The nutrients that come by virtue of runoff of fertilizers from farms and homes around the bay, and that creates the cloudiness in the water.
How long have you had a home on the bay?
1972, bought 10 acres in an old farmhouse. And then in 98, we built a permanent home and retired there in 2005.
Did what happened to the bay and the devastation to the oyster industry actually break your heart?
Oh, absolutely. Anything that destroys that magnificent environment. I mean, we've had for the last several summers dead spots where the oxygen is squeezed out of the water and nothing can live. But if that trend were to continue, that marvelous saltwater habitat, I mean, to be able to watch great blue heron and ducks and geese and swan and crabs, you know, you just couldn't possibly lose that. And unless we take proactive measures, that will simply be gone. You see oysters on the menu in Northern Neck, and they're from Louisiana. I mean, come on. They ought to be Virginia oysters.
Talk to me about how oysters grow. I think their shells are really remarkable. Can you almost see them adding layers of this magnificent structure?
Well, it's the growth rate to go from the volleyball-sized mesh bag of 1,000 baby oysters. 3 months later, they can weigh 60 pounds.
And how long before you eat them?
Well, this year's crop that I purchased in August, we will go through 2 Thanksgivings, and then they're ready. Often when friends invite you for dinner, you might take a bottle of wine or a spray of flowers out of the garden. But now that I find so many oyster fanciers who love fresh oysters, I'll go slip down to the pier and harvest several Ziploc bags full and arrive, always greeted with great smiles and glee, knowing that they've gotten brand new or very fresh Virginia oysters right out of the Chesapeake Bay. When Captain John Smith came up to Lancaster County in 1609, you know, he would just wade out and pick the oysters up off the bottom.
And they were huge.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, they probably would be the size of a hubcap. I mean, you would fillet an oyster for dinner as opposed to having a single oyster. But when we bought this property in 1972, our girls were 2 and 4, and their favorite adventure was to put on the little yellow duck boots, and they would head down, you know, low tide, and could walk right out and harvest oysters that were lying on the bottom. This disease, MSX and Dermo, changed that horizon entirely. For any bottom-bound oysters simply couldn't survive. And the aquaculture industry figured that if you put these oysters in floats, they would not be in contact with, you know, with any disease that could, you know, kill them off. But I just think it's so salutary. I mean, the benefit to the bay. I'm recruiting disciples every year to head over to buy spat and show them how to go through the process and build the floats, because having as many people as possible replicates the good old days when oysters were in profusion on the bottom, and it does all the filtration that cleans the water, and then grasses reoccur. And that's where the baby minnows and baby crabs live, in that marsh grass. So this filtration process returns the bay to its former state from when Captain Smith found it in 1609. Of course, if you really like oysters, you're not going to give them a chance to get as big as a hubcap. You'll gobble them up, and lots of people do. My favorite approach to cooking oysters, again, trying to keep it simple, if you take a Pyrex dish and put a quarter of an inch of water and put the shells edge to edge, don't stack them up, and microwave them on high for 4 minutes, they cook in their natural juices and the shell opens. Getting into a live oyster is a very tough process. I mean, to learn how to open them and how to cut the hinge so that you can get into them. But I like that with a little bit of cocktail sauce and horseradish. There are lots of folks that love them raw, but I haven't perfected that. I would rather have them fried or steamed.
Tell me about the shucking houses. They used to be, well, in profusion.
There once was, prior to this disease descending upon the oysters in the bay, shucking houses everywhere. Irvington, Virginia, that's only 8 miles from me, the Campbell Soup Company produced all of their oyster stew on Steamboat Lane. At the bottom of Steamboat Lane, they had all the ladies that shucked oysters, and that's where they cooked and prepared and canned all their oysters for national sales of Campbell Soup's oyster stew. But the disease changed all of that and changed all of the oyster houses. The disease is not the only problem. I mean, the state of Virginia created 3 artificial reefs and put millions of baby spat on those reefs in hopes of reestablishing them. But they now have the cow ray, which is, you sort of see with the great wings and the long spiked tail. Well, in about a week's time, they can gobble up 1 million baby spat. So it's back to the drawing board. My floats have a top that keep the otter out and the birds out, and crabs love baby oysters. So if you don't have it secure, you know, you're going to have a float full of, you know, chubby crabs and no oysters because they ate them all. I just want all of us to be focused on the delicacy of our environment. And this is one of those things where, well, what can I do? I'm just one person. If you've ever been to the Northern Neck, it is just the most glorious strip of land that is scribed by the Potomac on the north, the Chesapeake Bay on the east, Rappahannock on the south. And if you see the marsh birds and to see that profusion of wildlife, you just want to make sure you've done your part so that future generations will have the opportunity to enjoy it.
Considered an aphrodisiac by many, oysters are said to inspire lovers. They also inspire poets. Tim Siebels is a poet who teaches at Old Dominion University in Norfolk. He loves Lewis Carroll's famous poem about oysters, The Walrus and the Carpenter.
Oh, oysters, come and walk with us, the walrus did beseech. A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk, along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than 4, to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But 4 young oysters hurried up, all eager for the treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd, because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Four other oysters followed them, and yet another four. And thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so, and then they rested on a rock, conveniently low. And all the little oysters stood and waited in a row. "The time has come," the walrus said, "to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, of cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings." "But wait a bit," the oysters cried, "before we have our chat, for some of us are out of breath, and all of us are fat." "No hurry," said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that. "A loaf of bread," the walrus said, "is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar besides are very good indeed. Now if you're ready, oysters dear, we can begin to feed." "But not on us," the oysters cried, turning a little blue. "After such a kindness, that would be a dismal thing to do." "The night is fine," the walrus said. "Do you admire the view?" "Oh, oysters," said the carpenter, "you've had a pleasant run. Shall we be trotting home again?" But answer came there none. And this was scarcely odd, because they'd eaten every one.
Tim Siebels has written his own poetic response to this oyster injustice. It's called The Revenge of the Oysters, and you can hear him recite it on our website, withgoodreasonradio.org. Tim may write about oysters, but when it comes to actually eating the bivalves, he says he'll pass.
"I don't particularly like oysters to eat. I think they're fine creatures in the greater scheme of things. I have no particular beef with oysters, but they don't tempt my palate at all. I understand they're supposed to be an aphrodisiac, and I'm all for aphrodisiacs, but I think I will have to find my aphrodisiacs in other places. So more power to all those of you who love oysters. I just would rather view them from afar."
"Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay, do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love."
Come to the Virginia Festival of the Book, March 26th through 30th in Charlottesville. It features authors, illustrators, photographers, and other book professionals. For more information, visit vabook.org. You're listening to With Good Reason. Elliot Majerzik and Jesse Dukes are our associate producers. Andrew Windham is our executive producer. Nancy King creates our feature capsules. Jeannie Palin handles listener services. And Lydia Wilson is our publicity coordinator. We had help this week from Al Sykes and Teresa Serapetta of WHRV in Norfolk. With Good Reason is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, for the Higher Education Broadcasting Consortium, and public radio station serving Virginia. For a free copy of this show on CD or to comment, call 877-451-5098. You can listen to past With Good Reason shows at our website at withgoodreasonradio.org. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening. Let's do